Now, as promised, concluding our program today, our Left on the Law team, Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker, reflect on the U.S. Senate judicial hearing and the testimonials of Dr. Blasey Ford and Judge Kavanaugh and claims enlisted about the reliability of memory in situations of sexual assault. But first, an overture by Tom T. Hall to set the scene.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much, vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain. As a matter of fact, I like beer.
One of the only points of political agreement after testimonies of Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh before the Senate Judicial Committee on Thursday is that the performances were riveting, and riveting drama for their reflection of gender politics in this country. And Mike, I was interested in the righteous wrath of Lindsey Graham after the Kavanaugh testimony, kind of the Cassandra barking warnings to other powerful men. If they can get him, they can get you. First, they came for the serial rapist, and they come for the drunk groping a secretary at the Christmas party. What's next? If they go after these guys just working out and having a few beers, what's next? Well, Mike, let's talk about what's next. What's next after these performances?
Well, right now, what's next is the FBI. The FBI is supposedly investigating. Trump is happy because apparently there are strict limits as far as the FBI is going. So, and there's no particular chart here. It's all being improvised because the only law applicable is the Constitution's one sentence that says the president shall make the appointments with the advice and the consent of the Senate. So the Senate can do whatever it wants.
So what kind of advice can the FBI provide? You know, there was endless discussion that the FBI does not draw conclusions. It just gathers evidence. And this distinction, of course, was at stake in terms of the neutral fact-finding and the Democrats defending the neutrality of the FBI and arguing for an investigation, rightfully. But are you saying there's a kind of illusory search for truth through that route?
Well, the Democrats are pushing for lots of due process. You know, due process is a very flexible notion. If you are charged with a death penalty, you get lots of due process. You get two lawyers. You get the right to subpoena documents. You can depose people. You can investigate thoroughly.
And your life story matters in ways it should matter elsewhere. But
that's right. A huge amount of facts are relevant because anything that might move a juror to vote for a sentence of less than death can be presented. If, on the other hand, you've got a bank problem or a prisoner is being transferred from the main line to the hole, you maybe have the right to make your case and present a letter or two, but you don't have the right to subpoena people. You don't get to check anybody's email. You've got much more limited due process because of what's at stake. Now, here, either side can argue that it's a very profound question. What's at stake is really everything. The Supreme Court does have remarkable power within our system, so there's a lot at stake. And then everybody is being driven by the facts of what's at stake. I think the testimony of the doctor from the same school as Kavanaugh was credible. I think nobody could seriously deny that it was. And in our system, we don't have expert credibility evaluators. We have jurors. Everybody could see it was credible. But her credibility did not matter. To the Republicans, the fact that she was credible was annoying.
And if there had been more corroboration. If he had sprung up, which I thought he might do, and attack her if she had been in the room and raped her on the floor of the Judicial Committee, that those senators probably would have said, I didn't see anything.
Well, she was having a heart attack.
Yeah,
they were trying
he
to
rushed
administer
him to CPR. That's what he was doing, CPR.
See, they must get Kavanaugh appointed. That's the whole thrust of everything they're doing, because the evangelicals won't come out in November. Mm-hmm. It's a fundamental promises they've made. They've staked many careers on it. And the fact that Kavanaugh is generally perceived now as a jerk, as aggressive, sputtering, nothing remotely like a judicial temperament, that's all a problem. But it's not a determinative problem.
Because his performance was kind of an act of injured manhood. I think many people come in, they have never heard the word beer uttered so many times. And as a psychoanalytic therapist, I'm always interested in the word that gets repeated, because it's repeated for a reason. And it was repeated for a reason. And if he had said, I like white wine, I like white wine. Don't you like white wine? I still like white wine. It would not have had the same resonance with, and that combined with working out every night and having a few beers with his buddies. It was a bro performance. And of course, this guy comes from an incredibly elite background, and the context was a ruling class world of also, I'm sure, very repressive sexual politics. I wondered about those boys who did sexually assault, or the date rapes that I'm sure happened in that world, as they do in many. What about those girls who got pregnant from those encounters? This is not a world that forgives when women get Catholic women get abortions, same rate as not Catholic women, but they are condemned to a pretty horrible hell if it's found out.
Well, Kavanaugh is who he is, and I think we all know that. But politically, Democrats now have placed all their eggs in the basket of the FBI. And I think that's a wrong strategy. They've been embracing the deep state because of its opposition to Trump. And they've
when you say deep state, that's a term that gets used a lot on the right. So what do you mean when you say they've embraced? Because I associate that with some amount of right-wing rhetoric and paranoia.
Well, I associate it with what Karl Marx said, that the politicians are essentially the executive committee for corporations and money. And I think that the FBI, the CIA, the Senate, there's nothing secret here. There's nothing hiding. It's just the people who are carrying on, regardless of which politicians are elected.
And lobbyists and various, yeah.
For example, even the things that Trump has done that we can be intrigued by or even impressed by are rapidly undermined. His effort to cut back on NATO has been completely trashed. His effort to reach out for North Korea is now seen as blind deference to a despotic little tin-pot dictator. The fact that we are no longer doing cooperative massive military exercises near South Korea is regarded as a bad thing and not a good thing. So they're reflexively opposed to Trump. It reminds me of the Democrats who were opposed to the Iraq War, not because they thought it was a bad war, but because it was a Republican war. And so we see them supporting all sorts of aggressive intervention in foreign lands. And by deep state, I think there is a coherent, enormous bureaucracy and confluence of interests that are manifested in all the regular UN, NATO alliances abroad and in the politics of this country, that Trump himself has had to bumped up against its barriers. And by embracing it, the Democrats are now basically depending on the FBI. And the FBI, however, is not going to go very far. I mean, we'll see. But right now, it looks like they're going to have a very truncated investigation. They're not going to try to corroborate the testimony given on last Thursday. They're not going to try to interview new witnesses. They've interviewed one witness, Deborah Ramirez, but it looks like they're interviewing four people.
And there's a regret, I feel, that this is all has to be always the thing that brings a powerful man down, that if he had confessed to having been a pretty unruly and even cruel young man who drank heavily and acted out quite cruelly or insensitively when he was drunk. How would that kind of testimony have gone down? Because he didn't give an inch. He lied about what is demonstrably true about his youth and took a pretty extreme level of denial, a kind of meta Trumpian standard of denial that you never apologize, you never give an inch unless lawyers just drag you away with it and then you forget it and put it behind you and have a victim story. He took that strategy. What if he had acknowledged?
That would be an interesting discussion. The notion of redemption. If he'd have said, I drank too much when I was young. I don't remember this happening, but if it had, I'm profoundly sorry. Dr. Ford, I'm deeply sorry. I apologize. But I've transformed myself. I've spent decades now being a responsible citizen, working in the community, raising my family. Well, then we'd have a harder issue.
But the Republicans are not great on the forgiveness score of a particular working class or wayward youth who, I mean, they forgive their own through denials, but it's kind of like the drug war. You know, young people do not find mercy at the hands of Republicans in court. And was that a dilemma? If he had taken that strategy, as well as facing criminal charges in Maryland where there aren't statute of limitations, could that have opened the door to those kinds of consequences?
Well, he was fearing that. He was fearing that he might even not only not get this new job, but he might lose his old job, which is being a judge on the second most powerful court in this country, the D.C. Circuit. He could also possibly be liable to criminal charges on some of these claims. That's why he pursued the all or none, even though many things he said are demonstrably false.
But that doesn't seem to be on the table for the FBI, or it's on the periphery. And I think many people were confused by why are we talking about whether he's truthful about drinking or what he put in his yearbook, given that the main allegation is around attempted rape. The Democrats countered that it's a credibility issue if you lie. There was that Latin phrase, defense attorney tells the jury or the prosecutor, if you're false in one area, you may be false in another.
That's a common jury instruction. That's true, and that's what the Democrats are trying to do now, is find ways in which he lied. If he lied about his drinking, for example, you can infer that he's lying about saying that this never happened.
Or that he had blackouts or doesn't remember because of that.
It's a fruitful possibilities for investigation here. There are many angles, many ways in which the FBI could go if they were determined to examine every single possible bit of corroborative evidence.
But I don't mean to sound naive or obtuse, but I don't understand why, given that lying to a judicial committee is considered a felony, apparently, why the stack of lies already don't matter. Setting aside whether he had tried to rape this woman, just the stack of lies that have already been proven or claims that have been proven, why don't those matter?
Well, you have not proven them beyond a reasonable doubt. And of course, this is a job interview and it's not a criminal investigation.
So that's where those standards of doubt differ.
It's all about the reasonable, you know, the standard of evidence, preponderance of evidence. Who do you want to believe? And you could say, I don't believe that. You can point to certain facts which would tend to weigh things, but if you weigh those facts in the same, give them the same significance I do, I mean, it's all a matter of finally boiling down to he said, she said. And even though Dr. Ford was credible on the face, that's going to be he said, she said.
But setting that aside, I mean, just about all of that stuff in the yearbook, the level of his drinking, the insistence of his denials and other claims he's made.
Well, his redefinition of the devil's triangle and boofing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all stuff that you could say, well, yeah, he did that. So what? I mean, it doesn't bear directly on the charges. And so you can, if you want, and if you're a Republican now, you're pretty much compelled to dismiss that. It's not important.
And if he's confirmed, as is likely, there's still more to be played out. I mean, one consequence many have noted is that some of the aura of prestige attached to the Supreme Court is being shattered, but that the Supreme Court's been conservative for a very long time in their decisions. So maybe like the FBI, we have to be careful not to over-idealize institutions and cast a blind eye to some of how they operate.
It's hard to know, but we certainly know that it will be diminished. That is the court's prestige. It'll be like a predator court now. We've got Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh. This is not the kind of prestigious institution. And the institution requires that it be respected because it makes really sweeping and dramatic changes. It will, like, for example, reject a statute passed by a majority of legislators elected by the people. To be able to do that, you have to have a tremendous amount of respect for that institution.
Yeah. I noticed that there's some irony in that one of the decisions now before the court of whether to execute a man that does not remember his crime for other reasons other than too many beers. But the conservatives will vote to execute him, but they will certainly protect their own.
Well, if the Democrats do prevail in November, then their possibilities of investigation, of subpoenas, are tremendous. And they can and probably will pursue him. There are all sorts of ways in which what he has said or done leave open the possibility of criminal charges.
Even if he's confirmed.
Yeah. There's no reason that he cannot be impeached. There's no reason that he can't be criminally charged just because he's on the court. And I think it would play well with large segments of the American population. And they probably should do that for their own political reasons. But, of course, that will have the larger effect of further diminishing respect for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Is there any silver lining in diminished prestige for the Supreme Court? I mean, clearly lives are at stake, and I don't in any way mean to downplay that. But it's phenomenal, the amount of power these nine people hold over people's future. It's not a good thing for their lives, you know.
Well, that varies historically. I mean, it was the Supreme Court and not the frightened politicians of the mid-20th century that struck down segregation.
Well, that was one period in our history where you had the Warren Court, a truly progressive court. But for much of its history, it hasn't been. It's operating the service of the ruling class under the robes of its prestige. So,
well, that's true. They struck down the first laws providing minimum wage and forbidding child labor. They were completely in the pockets of Southern Pacific and the large corporations of the beginning of the 20th century. The only good thing about it, I think, is the balance of power and that it's really hard for any single group to pick up and run away with the American ball.
Okay, well, we'll keep seeing what's next, as Lindsey Graham keeps asking. We ask, too, what's next?
Whether the Democrats' faith in the FBI will be rewarded.
Yeah, we'll continue this. Jan Hocken, Mike Snedeker, talking today about the testimony before the Senate Judicial Committee last week.